Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Douglas Impoka in Washington. Today, Thursday, October 5th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Chad President Mahamat Idris Deby tours the nation, touting his promise to restore civilian rule within a year.
We have a gradual approach, and now I think one step has been taken forward after this day because we are able to sign this MIP.
And the European Union Commissioner pledges millions of dollars to Ethiopia in a step toward normalizing relations. Those stories and more coming up on Daybreak Africa. Former Zambian Vice President Dr. Nevers Sakwila Mumba has been tapped to lead the Electoral Observation Mission of the Electoral Institute for Sustainable Democracy in Africa, which has deployed a fully-fledged team of both long-term and short-term teams of observers to Liberia. Mumba recently headed the SADC Electoral Observer Mission to Zimbabwe, where his team became the first SADC Observer Mission to call out shortcomings of the just-ended August elections. In an exclusive interview with Blessing Zulu of VOA's Zimbabwe service, Mumba said he would be working alongside observers from the African Union and ECOWAS to ensure a credible vote.
It is true that a group called ISA, which is a continental democratic organization, which is a not-for-profit organization, and has been observing elections over many, many years, and they have gained very high credibility in terms of their work. They asked if we could lead their observer mission to Liberia to handle the 10th of October election, which will be taking place towards the end of next week. So, yes, we accepted the invitation. The Zambian government has also endorsed that I can go. And so we are looking forward to working with our colleagues in West Africa, you know, groupings like ECOWAS and also the African Union, to observe the election and prayerfully that we could end up with a free, fair and credible election for the people of Liberia.
You talked about elections that are free and credible. Why is that important for Africa?
You see, it is important for us to accept the fact that we have chosen the system of democracy on the African continent, especially in the area of choosing our leaders. The positive thing about the democracy, if it is worked out well, is that it's a formation of governments on the basis of consensus. And so if you put in office a government that has got the support of the majority, it reduces the tensions in the country and also reduces conflict and also introduces a very high level of peace, relative peace, in the country, and thereby Africa itself can enjoy peace if the elections are free and fair and credible. If they are not, it becomes a boiling pot of confusion, conflict, and violence. And I think that all of us in leadership on the African continent must accept the fact that we should not or never push or promote anything that brings a lack of credibility to the elections or that brings any election into doubt, because that translates into instability and also conflict and therefore retards the progress in developing for that particular country.
Former Zambian Vice President Dr. Nevers Sakwila Mumba speaking with reporter Blessing Zulu from Lusaka, Zambia. Meanwhile, a UN Human Rights Office spokesperson in Liberia, Saif Magango, has raised concern over reports of pre-election violence. In a statement, Magango cited reported instances of election-related assaults, use of language that could amount to hate speech, and attacks on journalists in Liberia ahead of the general election on October 10th. And the African Union Transition Mission in Somalia, ATMIS, said Tuesday that its Burundi and Ugandan contingent carried out a joint military offensive with the Somali National Army, along with local volunteers, that inflicted heavy casualties on Al-Shabaab terrorists. In a statement, ATMIS said the operation took place in a forest near the village of Ali Fodere in the southern province of Middle Shabelle. The operation comes less than 2 weeks after Somalia asked the UN Security Council for a three-month delay in the planned drawdown of Artemis after setbacks in the fight against the terrorist group. Abdi Ismail Samata is a professor at the University of Minnesota and a senator in the Somali parliament. He tells me that although the AU forces have made enormous sacrifices in Somalia, the main problem is the political culture of the elite in the country.
The African Union force has made enormous sacrifices to help the Somali people over the last 15 years. The original strategy, I think, was wrong, but the sacrifices are just genuine and tremendous. Having said that, the issue is not so much as troops per se, as the political culture of the elite in that country, not being commensurate to the sacrifices both the local people, the local troops, and the AU troops are making. The political class is so corrupt, so incompetent, that no matter how much military force is put on the ground, the crisis will fester for a very long time. So the military strategy has to be sort of partnered by a political strategy that will get out of this ramshackle that's called political class in Mogadishu.
How strong is are the Al-Shabaab forces there? Is it, as you say, the corruption of the political leadership? What's the assessment?
I wrote a piece for a South African newspaper, I think earlier in the year, called The Conversation. And in there, what I said is Al-Shabaab is the symptom of the problem, not the problem itself. And if you go back to the history of the country in the last 40 years, it's the catastrophe which was generated by the dictatorship of the regime and the corruption of the military regime that produced a sort of a stateless society. It wasn't Al-Shabaab. Then the politicians and the warlords came together and created some unworkable system that's based on tribalism rather than citizenship. That did not help the people. And the warlords ultimately drove people into the hands of the religious people in 2006, 2008. That's when they got rid of the warlords. But because the international community saw a glimpse of sort of Islamic radicals in the Union of the Islamic Courts in those days, they subverted that, and then part of them became Al-Shabaab. So the Shabaab is the consequences rather than the cause of the Somali political calamity. So the African Union force, God bless them. The Somali military sort of troops, God bless them. But those two cannot defeat Al-Shabaab without a clear civic political leadership for the country. And that's where the rub is.
The Somali government asked the UN Security Council for a 3 month delay in the planned drawdown of Artemis. Is that period enough, Somali government, to have put its forces in order?
I don't think so. I think a reformed ATMAS, or African Union force, first of all, that has to be reformed. The mandate has to be reformed. Secondly, the Somali forces themselves have to be completely reorganized such that there is a civic leadership, that there is a political program that guides the professional military. If you don't do that, then 3 months, 4 months, 6 months, 8 months, a year, 2 years, we will be back at square one. So 3 months is an okay extension for now, but something heavy lifting needs to be done, both on the military professionalization front, and certainly the political cabal has to be reorganized and reoriented.
And what ought to be done in the short term? Because there seems to be fatigue on the part of AU peacekeepers. It's been a long time. What do you think will happen in the short term?
I think the short term, if we say in the next year, I think the international community that has funded this agenda, the African Union that has put the men and the women's lives at risk, they have to demand from the political class that there has to be a civic agenda that's clearly marketed now, not tomorrow, not the day after, now. This business of tribalistic-based politics of this clan, that clan, has ruined the lives of the people, has ruined the country, has cost more lives for the African Union than would have been the case. In the next year, that kind of an agenda needs to be put into place. And in the meantime, what the African Union and the international community are should do if they are interested to transform this place and help the Somalis become what they used to be in the old days when they were contributing to African Union forces, who that didn't exist at that point in time, to the liberation movement, all of those things. That should be what's on the cards today. Otherwise, the 3 months will come and we will be exactly back into the same place. 6 months back into the same place.
Abdi Ismail Samata is a professor at the University of Minnesota and a senator in the Somali parliament. He spoke with me earlier from Minneapolis. Washington is reeling after Kevin McCarthy's unprecedented ouster as Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives on Tuesday. The body is in recess for the rest of the week after while Republicans use the time to coalesce and try to elect a new speaker next week. Sarah Binder is a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution and professor of political science at George Washington University. She tells VOA's Caravan Dam the House is operating under an untested rule since this marks the first time ever a U.S. speaker has been expelled.
It's a brand new rule created in the wake of 9/11, lest there be a mass catastrophe that takes out the speaker. So at currently, it seems the parliamentarian, the experts on the Hill here, must be advising a narrow path, which McHenry seems happy to take, which is, by and large, his actions. He has the full authority of the speakership directed toward the election of the next speaker. Now, the first thing he did yesterday was to put the House into recess for a number of days, it seems.
Now, that's something I want to ask you about, because how, you know, you're in this big mess right now, all this chaos, and, you know, the deadline is looming for all these big, huge appropriations bills, and you go on recess for a week. Yes. Why did the House do that?
Well, the reality is the House needs a fully elected speaker to have really the authority of the position. And the Republicans are not anywhere near coalescing, if they can coalesce, around a replacement for Speaker McCarthy. And I think there's just too much turmoil, really, for Republicans to think about how they would advance any bills or make any progress in the absence of settling the leadership question.
So they're kind of forced to take this time out, you're saying, because they have to coalesce and they have to at least try to come up with enough votes to get a new speaker.
Certainly. And just to keep in mind that the acting speaker, McHenry, can recess the House without a vote. And so this he knows he can take care of. You can imagine, even if someone wanted to formally adjourn for a little while, that takes a vote and might not work. Even if he could, they're not going to pass, certainly in today's turmoil amongst the House Republicans.
Yeah,
so
this is
like
precedent setting.
Yes, yes. And just to keep in mind, right, the point of this whole rule where there's a speaker in waiting was originally were there to be, God forbid, another 9/11. And in that situation, we might want a House that's ready to legislate and ready to go on. So absolutely, this is precedent setting, but in a really, really narrow path.
And besides there being such partisanship in Congress, this is happening now because there's such a razor-thin margin of Democrats to Republicans in the House, right?
Well, it's the slim margin, but it's also this notion we have this faction within the House Republican Conference. And, you know, we struggled to come up with a name for the faction. Sometimes we call them renegades. Sometimes people call it the far right. But it's not just that they're conservative, right? They are rebel rousers. They're bomb throwers. I think the best word we have here is they're hardliners. But they really want to seemingly have chaos. And just last week, there was a temporary spending bill on the floor that gave them everything the hardliners wanted on severe spending cuts, pretty stringent immigration border control, and they voted against it.
Yeah, and it stripped the funding for Ukraine, too, which they demanded.
Yes. So it's really literally, I think that's much of why you see such angst amongst the House Republican Conference.
So what do you think is going to happen when they come back?
Well, I wish I knew. From now until the Republicans meet as a conference, I think on Tuesday, to hear from prospective nominees, there will just be a lot of legwork on the part of potential speaker nominees and their allies in the House to try to wipe out the competition.
That's Sarah Binder, a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution and professor of political science at George Washington University. She was speaking with my colleague, Cara Van Dam, in Washington. A European Union commissioner has met with Ethiopian government officials and pledged millions of dollars in a step toward normalizing relations between the two. Maya Meskel reports from Addis Ababa.
European Union Commissioner Jutta Urpilainen met with Ethiopian government officials during a visit Tuesday that included an announcement of $680 million in support from the EU. Urpilainen announced the support following a meeting with Ethiopian Finance Minister Ahmed Shide. The commissioner, who is also taking part in the Horn of Africa Initiative ministerial meeting in Addis Ababa, said the EU is promoting economic integration in the Horn of Africa.
Ethiopia is a strategic partner for the European Union, and today we are able to take important step forward in the afternoon when we are signing our multi-annual indicative program for our bilateral cooperation.
The multi-annual indicative program is intended to focus on three priority issues: a green agenda, human development, and peace building. The commissioner also met with Moussa Faki Mohamed, the chairperson of the African Union Commission, and Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed. The EU suspended all budgetary support to Ethiopia 3 years ago following the start of open conflict in the country's Tigray region. Asked about the relationship between the EU and Ethiopia, the commissioner said money was part of a gradual process.
We have a gradual approach, and now I think one step has been taken forward after this day because we are able to sign this MIP.
This is a very important commitment from the EU to Ethiopia's development, to Ethiopia's economic reform, Ahmed said during a news conference held in Addis Ababa.
EU is a major source of investment for Ethiopia, is a major trading partner. So leveraging on this capacity is also complement our development partnerships. We have also discussed on how to enhance our regional economic integration.
The EU announced the suspension of budgetary support to Ethiopia in December 2020, 2 months after the start of the war in Tigray. The African Union brokered a peace deal after 2 years of conflict. Maya Misikir, VOA News, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm Douglas Impoga in Washington. Chad President Mahamat Idriss Deby is touring towns across the nation, touting his efforts to maintain peace and restore civilian rule by November 2024, in accordance with resolutions set forth in the October 2020 Inclusive and Sovereign National Dialogue. But Chad's political opposition says the Central African state remains plagued by hunger, poverty, and armed conflict since Deby took power in April of 2021. Moki Edwin Kinzikam reports from neighboring Cameroon.
State TV reports that Abeche was the 21st city Chad's president, General Mahamat Idriss Deby, visited to explain progress made for a return to civilian rule since the military leader took power in April 2021 following the death of his father. This week's visit to Abeche, capital of the Kodai region and the country's fourth largest city, was the 21st stop since the military leader launched a tour of towns and villages to explain progress made in developing the Central African state and ending what officials call endemic poverty. Deby's message to civilians in Abeche was broadcast by Chad's national TV.
The government of Chad avait initié un projet d'envergure.
Deby says drinkable water has been extended to several villages and towns, including Abeche. Many hospitals have either been constructed or equipped to respond to civilian health needs, and primary education is free to enable all Chadian children to have an education. Deby adds that his government is funding many agriculture and livestock projects to make youths and women economically independent. Deby said political parties and civilians should prepare for free elections to determine their leader by November 2024. He said despite difficult living conditions caused by humanitarian crises, including floods and intercommunal conflicts, Chad is still home to about 400,000 civilians fleeing conflicts in neighboring Sudan. Deby was named head of an 18-month transitional council on April 21, 2021, following the death of his 68-year-old father from injuries sustained while visiting troops on the front line. The junta's 18-month transition to democracy expired in October 2022, but the Inclusive and Sovereign National Dialogue, initiated by military leaders, extended it by 24 months and said Deby will be eligible to run for the presidency when elections are held in November 2024. Timam Erdimi is the leader of the Union of Resistance Forces, UFR, a Chadian rebel group that had more than 800 fighters in 2008. He returned to Chad in August 2022 after about 10 years in exile in Qatar to participate in the October 2022 Inclusive and Sovereign National Dialogue to pave the way for a return to democratic rule. Erdimi told reporters in Kera, his hometown, on Monday, Deby has failed to put in place a committee to follow up resolutions of Doha peace talks and is not implementing resolutions of the national dialogue as expected. He says he wants the international community to be witnesses that Chad's military government is not fully implementing a peace deal signed by more than 40 opposition groups in the Qatari capital Doha in 2022. He says the military leader's interest is to have a strong grip on power. Erdimi said the Central African state has remained in deep hunger and poverty and plunged into armed conflict since Deby gained power as president of the Transitional Military Council in April 2021. Chad's government says it will respect its promise to return to civilian rule by November 2024. Tama Ahmad is a political affairs lecturer at the University of N'Djamena. He says Chad's fragmented opposition that is made up of over 200 political parties and about 500 civil society groups will find it difficult to beat Deby in an election. He says if Chad's opposition and rights groups were united, they could have made it clear during the national dialogue that Deby should not be eligible to run for the presidency. Chad's government says more than 1,400 representatives of rebel groups, civil society, trade unions, political parties, and government officials attended the October 2022 N'Djamena National Reconciliation Dialogue. France, the European Union, and the African Union have asked Deby to meet the October deadline. Moki Edwin Kinzika, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
And that's it for this Thursday, October 5th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for being our guest this morning. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm Douglas Impuga in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
The Voice of America keeps you in touch with the latest news.
Tune in at the top of every hour, every day of the week.
For the 5-minute VOA newscast.
We bring you reports from our correspondents and interviews with newsmakers from around the globe.
Give us 5 minutes and we'll give you the world.
VOA, your trusted source for news.